There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume.
We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass.
Or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want, because this is...
Mystery Playhouse. 90.1.
Come in. Welcome to the Mystery Playhouse. I am the Count, your host of horror. Yes, come in. I'd like you to meet some fraternity friends, so-called Greek guests. Now, this gentleman here is Oedipus Rex. He felt guilty about eyeing his mother, so he took matters into his own hands, huh? Yes. In fact, now he is such a good card player because he has what they call a poker face, huh? Oh, yes. And this here is Medusa with the snake hair. She said to have been really intoxicating because she left everyone stoned, huh?
Oh, tell me about it, really.
You know, though, sometimes I think she'd still be doing it now if she hadn't only reflected on herself.
Oh, really?
And over here, this is the famous warrior Achilles. He'd still be alive today if he wasn't such a heel, huh? Then again, I sure it was only a matter of time before someone just as good got their foot in the door, huh? The djinn's name was Paris, and Achilles should have known better when he was challenged to meet toe-to-toe, huh? I won't say that he didn't put up a good fight, but he did get his you-know-what kicked, huh? And that's what you'll get tonight. Lots of kicks from tonight's super scary stories, including Weird Circles, the old nurse's story, and the Chateau Inn ghost building. But first, it's that super scary Ronald Reagan Inn one-way passage. So scary!
Gruen. G-R-U-E-N. The Precision Watch dedicates to the radio audience of America... Warner Brothers Academy Theater, transcribed from Hollywood. Warner Brothers Academy presents One Way Passage, one of the greatest pictures of all time, which won for the author, Robert Lord, the Academy Award of 1932.
Tonight's premiere is a presentation of the Warner Brothers Academy, which has for the past 5 years given secret performances for the executives, producers, directors, and stars of Hollywood. Tonight, for the first time, Gruen makes it possible with the playing of One Way Passage for the American public to join this exclusive audience. The Academy was founded by Warner Brothers 5 years ago for the purpose of developing motion picture actresses who have won their stripes in some medium of the drama other than the screen. In our audience tonight are many stars who have interested themselves in the Academy. We are further honored tonight to present a man whose interest in the Academy has been so evidenced that he has never missed a performance, and who is personally responsible for the success of many of today's stars, Mr. J.L. Warner, Executive Vice President in charge of production of Warner Brothers Pictures.
For years, I have hesitated to have any publicity regarding this Academy of ours, although I am proud to say we consider it one of our most successful efforts, ranking it even with such pictures as The Life of Emil Zola, Gold is Where You Find It, and Jezebel. Associated with it have been such personalities as Earl Flynn, Wayne Morris, Edward G. Robinson, Dick Powell, James Cagney, and Betty Davis. And now, since we are convinced that it is possible to present these players to the public through the medium of radio, you are tonight, for the first time, invited to join us. I sincerely hope that you enjoy the young players of this academy in One Way Passage.
Thank you, Mr. Warner. The honor of ringing up the curtain on One Way Passage goes to the man who won the Academy Award by writing tonight's story, and who is now one of the most important producers on the Warner Brothers lot, Mr. Robert Lord.
One of the penalties of being an author is the excitement and nervousness you experience on your own opening night. 5 years ago, I went through that experience and thought I was finished with it. But now here is One Way Passage again, having another first night. And here am I, just as nervous and excited as before. Whatever calmness I possess this evening is due to the knowledge that two such excellent performers as Ronald Regan and Gloria Dixon are to play Dan and John. These young players are an example of what the Warner Academy has accomplished by way of developing potential screen stars. You'll remember Gloria for her fine work in They Won't Forget, and Ronald Regan will soon be on the screen in Cowboy from Brooklyn. As evidence of the genuine interest shown by successful Hollywood stars in the players of the Warner Academy, we have with us Henry O'Neill. One of the finest character actors in Hollywood, he is Paul Muni's first choice for every picture that he makes. Tonight, he has graciously offered his services in support of these young players and will be heard in the role of Dr. Travers. But now it's curtain time, and I get a real thrill in saying, on with the show.
One Way Passage. The story of One Way Passage has its beginning in a cosmopolitan bar on the waterfront in Shanghai, where a distinctly American voice discusses with a distinctly American bartender the right ingredients for the perfect cocktail.
Careful now, Joe. Not too much. Just a drop, partner. Just a drop.
Oh.
There.
Say, that's great.
And just a bit of stirring, ever so gently.
Wouldn't do to shake it.
Oh, no, absolutely not. You can't break up good liquor in a shaker. Believe me, friend, I wouldn't make one of these for a foreigner. Well, there she is, a paradise cocktail.
I am, thanks to you.
Go ahead, taste it.
Well, Joe, here's Asher.
Oh.
Oh, now, lady, look what you've done.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not at all. That's quite all right. You have some more there in the shaker, haven't you, Joe? You'll have to join me, you know.
Joe, two glasses.
Oh, no, I...
Matter of fact, no man should ever drink a paradise cocktail alone. It's sacrilege.
Here you are, partner.
It's like watching a beautiful sunset all by yourself. Shall we?
Oh, yes, of course.
And here's to you, Miss,
My name's Joan.
Mine's Dan.
Oh, that's lovely.
I see you have a few drops left.
Few drops, yes. Always the most precious... Well?
Just a moment. Those last few drops. Let's drink them to our meeting.
Our brief meeting. I'm sailing at noon.
I'm sorry.
And suddenly I'm sorry, too. Well, here's hail and farewell.
Oh, that sounds too ruthless. I tell you, let's say auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen. The last few drops.
And, Joan?
Yes, Dan?
So that these two glasses will only remember this moment, let's break them.
Right. And now, off to you.
Gee, she was a pretty lady.
Yes, wasn't she? You know, Joe, for the first time, I almost wish I were sailing on that boat.
Hello, Dan.
If it isn't Steve Burke.
Me, all right. You know, I'd almost given up hope running into you. I'm sailing at noon. And Danny boy, you're sailing with me. How'd it seem being back in Frisco again?
You, of all people, should ask that.
Maybe we'd better get going. Wouldn't want to miss the boat. Feeling better, Joan?
Yes, Doctor, I think I'll go out a while. Walk around the deck. Do something.
I don't believe I'd leave my stateroom if I were you. You see, you've been going at too fast a pace.
What you really mean, what you're too kind to say, is that if I remain in my stateroom and lie in bed, deny myself everything, even the mildest diversions, I may live to arrive at a charming sanitarium.
But when it's a question of your own life...
I'm afraid it's nothing but a drab picture, Doctor.
You're the steward on the deck, aren't you?
Where's that voice coming from?
Someone on deck, coming through the porthole.
I'm looking for a young lady. Maybe you've seen her.
You'd better get back in bed, Joan. Anything special you want?
You know what I want. Suddenly, I want to crowd all of the intense, beautiful happiness in the world into what little life I have left. I want to live a lifetime before this boat reaches San Francisco. And I'm going to do it.
Joan.
If it's only for a few hours, I mean to have it. All of the happiness I can get my hands on. Now you'd better leave, Doctor.
All right.
I'm going on deck.
Now, look, bartender. Think real hard. You must have seen her.
Nah, it's surprising how little you notice the customers. You know, when you're in my business, they all look alike.
Oh, you'd be sure to notice her. Now, look, she's about so tall and...
And her name is Joan.
What? Joan.
Hello, Dan.
Joan, I've been looking all over this boat for you for the past 2 days. I've made a nuisance of myself asking everyone. Where have you been?
Well, Well, we just must have missed each other.
Bartender, please put that drink in 2 glasses. Joan, I haven't been able to forget you.
And I haven't been able to forget you.
There you are.
To us?
Lovely. Now the glasses?
By all means. There they go. Shattered, but with a beautiful memory.
Out in a blaze of glory. And that's the way, isn't it, Dan?
You found that out, too?
Yes.
Hello, Dan. Been wondering what you were up to.
Oh, Joan, this uncouth gentleman is Mr. Burke. He's a friend of mine. We're traveling together.
Lady, I don't like to break up your little soiree, but if you don't mind, I'd like to talk to your boyfriend.
Oh, now, look, Steve, I... Okay. Joan, please excuse me, will you? I'll call for you later.
All right, Dan, I'll be waiting for you. My stateroom is D12 on the top deck.
Then I'll call for you.
I'm glad to have met you, lady.
I'm glad to have met you, too.
Hey, what's the percentage in mooning around with a dame like that?
That's something you wouldn't understand. Well, Steve, what's on your mind?
I just want to have a little talk with you. You know, we get to Honolulu tomorrow.
Yes, I know.
And in case you've got any ideas...
You're not worrying about me, are you? Why, Mr. Burke.
Oh, no, I ain't worrying, but just the same, don't forget we're sticking together. Come on, let's do about 40 turns around the deck. Keep you in shape.
What's the percentage of me keeping in shape?
Yeah, Yeah, that's a good one.
Oh, darling, no. I'm too excited. Oh, Dan, this has been the most wonderful evening. Just look at that moon on the water. And just think that straight ahead in the path of that moon, my precious, we have Honolulu. Tomorrow we'll be there.
That's right.
What are we going to do ashore, darling? Let's plan every minute.
Let's not plan anything now, Joan. Let's just wait and see what happens.
You don't seem very enthusiastic about it.
Well, there's something that might keep me on board.
Oh, Dan. Dan, and I counted on it so. Well, I won't be able to sleep tonight till you promise me you'll go.
Well, all right. I'll meet you at the Beach Boy. That's a little cafe on Hibiscus Road. You can't miss it. Anyone can direct you.
I'll be there.
Shall we say an hour after the boat docks?
Shall we?
And, Joan, if something happens, if I don't get there... Well, you wait an hour. That's all.
And the curtain falls on the first act of One Way Passage.
In thinking of a watch,
all of you take for granted the fact that a Gruen watch is made with the highest possible standards of precision accuracy. But the brilliant styling of the newest Gruen watches exceeds even Gruen's own previous successes in the creation of sheer captivating beauty. Discriminating Americans everywhere acclaim the 1938 Gruens as the smartest, most thoroughly modern of all timepieces. Visit your Gruen jeweler tomorrow. Ask him to show you his new Gruen watches, and you will see for yourself the smartest styling, the most brilliant beauty of the watchmaker's art. And you are sure to be pleasantly surprised at Gruen's prices, for you can now own a genuine Gruen for as little as $24.75.
The curtain rises on the second act of One Way Passage.
Oh, Dan. Dan, it's all been so wonderful. Such fun having lunch in the little cafe. So heavenly here in this quiet little cove.
Joan, do you love me?
More than anything in the whole world. I love you more than life, Dan. Believe me.
Would you be content to spend the rest of your life with me in some far-off, isolated place?
Well, of course, Dan, anywhere. Why, so serious.
I could send for you.
Send for me?
You see, dear, there are certain matters that may take me halfway around the world.
Well, then don't send for me, Dan. I'll go with you. There, that's it.
Darling, I've got to tell you.
Well, if it's serious, I don't want to hear it. Not today.
But, Joan...
No, Dan. Don't talk. Just hold me. In your arms. I hate to go back on that ship. I've had the most glorious day.
You two going on board?
Well, yes, at least that's the idea.
Well, 2 minutes to sailing time. You better hurry.
Joan.
Yes, dear?
There's something I've been trying to tell you all day.
Not now, darling. We haven't time.
Yes, I must tell you. Now. Here. Let me hold you close. And please understand.
Dan.
I'm not going back on the ship.
You're not. Dan.
Joan. Joan. Joan, darling.
What's going on here?
She's fainted.
You want me to help you carry her?
No, I can do that all right. I can carry her. I'll take her aboard.
Right, stand tight, everybody. Let him through. Come on, open up the hatch. Come on. Let him through.
She'll be all right.
Are you sure?
Yes, but she must have absolute quiet and rest. I was very much against her going ashore today.
Oh, it was my fault, Doctor. But if you're sure she's going to be all right, I'll be leaving.
Very nice.
Dan. Dan.
Yes, dear.
Don't leave me.
You must be quiet now. Try to sleep.
Don't leave me.
She's resting.
Then I think I'll go on.
I'll walk out into the corridor with you. I want to tell you something.
All right, but hurry it up, will you, Doctor?
Dan, I want you to help me. Has Joan told you about herself?
What do you mean?
Joan must have absolute rest and quiet if she is ever to reach the mainland alive.
I didn't know it was that bad.
Yeah, she's had several attacks like this one. She survived them, but it isn't humanly possible that she could survive another. The slightest excitement might kill her. The shock surely would. And, Dan, I know the shock that is coming.
Doctor, you've been talking to Steve.
Yes, I have.
Then you know that Steve is a cop who finally caught up with me, that I'm under arrest.
Yes, I know. But can we find some way to keep it from her?
I don't know how. If I could go over the side when we're out at sea to keep her from knowing, I'd gladly do it. But that wouldn't help. Doctor, the ship's moving. We're on our way again. I gave Steve the slip today. Then I came back. That was my last chance. Doctor, the next time the boat stops, they'll turn me over to San Quentin. I guess Steve told you. They're going to hang me, Doctor. They're going to hang me for murder.
There it is, Dan. Golden Gate. We'll be in San Francisco quicker than you can say Paradise Cocktail.
Yes, won't be long.
You're not very cheerful about it. What'll we do tonight, darling? Let's go someplace and drink a dozen Paradise Cocktails.
The Golden Gate.
You know, I remember an old song. It goes, keep those golden gates wide open, keep those gates ajar.
Yes, I remember it. I was born in San Francisco. When I was a youngster, I always thought they were singing about this gate. I thought it was the only one.
Hope you were wrong.
So do I. Joan, about those cocktails, I won't be able to see you tonight because I've got to go to Mexico.
Mexico?
Yes, I'm sorry, dear. As soon as the boat docks, I must leave.
You're going to Mexico?
I must go. I may have to stay there a long time.
All right, then, Dan. I'll meet you in Agua Caliente for New Year.
It's a date.
Come on, Dan. Let's go down to the stateroom. We've got a little business to take care of before the boat gets in.
Joan, I'll meet you in your stateroom to say goodbye. You wait for me, Joan. That's it. You wait for me.
Hello, miss. What can I do for you?
Well, I was looking for Dan. Mr. Hardesty. Isn't this his stateroom?
Sure it is, miss.
Well, I was waiting for him in my stateroom, but he didn't come. You know where he is?
Blimey, I don't know where he is exactly, but I know where he's going. I was never so shocked in my life. All the time I was thinking he was a gentleman, and a fine gentleman, too, you might say.
What happened?
What happened? Right here before me very eyes, his friend, his pal, you might rightly say, puts a pair of blooming handcuffs on him, and out they go.
What do you say?
It's the truth, so help me, miss. And do you know what he is? He's a blooming murderer. His friend told me so. He says they're going to hang him.
No. No, it can't be. Dan. Dan, I've got to find you. Dan. Dan. Dan.
Oh, Joan, we were just leaving.
I know.
Sorry to upset you like this, Miss Ames, but we wasn't expecting you.
Joan, I'm sorry it had to come like this. I wanted to tell you.
Well, I only wanted to say goodbye, Dan.
Not goodbye, Joan, ever. Remember? Auf Wiedersehen.
And remember Agua Caliente. New Year's Eve. Auf Wiedersehen.
I beg your pardon, but aren't you Mr. Burke?
Huh? Oh, hello. Sure, I remember you. You're that doctor fellow.
Yeah.
I met you on the boat.
Yes, you're the detective who was with Mr. Dan Hardesty.
Yeah, that's right. What are you doing in Caliente?
Oh, I came down here on a sort of a vacation. Sort of change of scene might do me good.
Yeah, same with me. Bring your drink over here. We'll have one together.
All right.
Hey, waiter, bring the doctor's drink.
Si, senor.
We'll be having this drink just at midnight. See? It's almost 12.
Yeah. Glad to run into you, Doc. I was getting kind of lonesome. Kind of down in the dump.
Your drink, senor.
Oh, thank you. I guess maybe we ought to drink this one to Dan and Miss Ames, don't you think?
I was just going to suggest that myself.
It was tough they had to hang him.
Yes, I read about it in the paper. Too bad. I like him.
Death wasn't bad enough. The guy had to fall in love. What about the lady? Did she take it hard?
She died, too.
You know, I heard him say, Agua Caliente, New Year's Eve. What was that?
Oh, just somebody broke a couple of glasses.
Well, here's to them.
And the curtain falls on One Way Passage, and on the premiere presentation by Gruen of the Warner Academy Theater. And congratulations are certainly due all around to Mr. Robert Lord, Gloria Dixon, Ronald Reagan, Henry O'Neill, and Gail Gordon, who was heard in the role of Steve. Before we say goodnight, we're going to call on one of the staunch supporters, an alumnus of the Academy who has been sitting in the audience throughout tonight's show. He's the star of Warner Brothers' new picture, Over the Wall, and you have seen him in many fine screen roles. We turn the spotlight on Dick Foran. Dick, will you come up here, please? Just a moment.
While Dick Foran is coming up on the stage, I want to urge you to visit your Gruen jeweler tomorrow. There you will find the world's first true wristwatch, the Gruen Curvex. In the Gruen Curvex, the beautiful and graceful lines of the curved case are filled with a rugged, full-size curved movement. A curved watch must have a curved movement unless accuracy is to be sacrificed. Only the Gruen Curvex combines beauty and dependability. For this Curvex principle is patented exclusively by Gruen. Also at your Gruen jeweler's, you will find a wide variety of Gruen watches, all beautifully styled by the world's leading watch designers, all made in the Gruen tradition of precision workmanship and priced to suit every need and fit your pocketbook. Insist on the name Gruen on the dial of your new watch. Gruen, G-R-U-E-N, the proudest name in time.
Dick Foran, meet the audience.
Well, before I talk about anything else, I'd like to tell Ronnie and Gloria what a swell job they did tonight.
I suppose it's natural for you to feel that way, Dick, since Gloria Dixon and Ronald Reagan are your colleagues, so to speak.
Well, sure, it's like watching your own team come through with a win.
I see. Dick, one of these nights we're going to put you to work on this stage, which reminds me to ask what you're doing about your own career right now.
Well, I whipped over this evening from stage 19, the set of Boy Meets Girl. But look here, let's leave me out of this. I think Gloria and Ronnie should come out for a curtain speech. How about it?
A grand idea.
Come on, you two. This is opening night. We've got to stand still for congratulations.
Well, you'll have to give me a little time, Dick. I'm going to take a while for me to forget that I'm not Joan.
Well, how do you feel, Ronnie?
Well, Dan Hardesty's been one of my favorite screen characters for a long time. And I feel a little humble that I was allowed to play him tonight.
And say, while we're throwing bouquets, I saw Over the Wall last night, Dick. You were swell.
I thought you'd like One Way Passage, Dick, because you played a convict in Over the Wall. Of course, there are no boat scenes because you're in prison.
Well, it's no movie set either because the story was written by a man who knows about such things. Warden Louis E. Laws of Sing Sing. And after sitting on that set behind iron bars for several weeks, you know, I can sympathize with Dan Hardesty.
But you sing your way out of jail, which makes your ending happier than Dan's.
Well, I'll be a lot happier when my turn comes to do a play at this theater if I turn in a job of acting that's half as good as yours was.
Thank you, Dick, and good night.
Good night, Dick. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Dick Foran. And next week, Gruen, the Precision Watch, will again be your host to encore one of the most delightful romantic comedies of last year's screen successes, The Rollicking, The King, and The Chorus Girl, which starred Joan Blondell and Ferdinand Gravé, with a splendid Warner Academy cast presented before another brilliant Hollywood audience and with a distinguished guest producer. So it's goodbye until curtain time next week.
We are pleased to announce that Dick Foran, starring in Over the Wall, a gripping drama of prison life written by Warden Lewis E. Laws of Sing Sing Prison, may be seen this week at your local theater. And join us again next week in the Warner Academy Theater, transcribed from Hollywood. A feature of the Trans-American Broadcasting System.
Kids, was it that the scariest? One-way passage, oh. And poor Ronald Reagan, he got a one-way ticket on a boat up the river. Really? Tell him about it. Like I've heard of rough landings, but that was too much, huh? I guess it was the big timekeeper in the sky. He just decided to dock him, huh? Really? You know, you could even say that he was arrested by Pierce, huh? Too bad, too. He should have learned never to rock the boat, huh? Like they say, people should shape up or ship out, huh? Now, the truth is that he got electrocuted in Alcatraz, the big house on the rock. Hence the running gag that people in rock houses shouldn't throw glass, huh? Unless, of course, they were deliberately trying to toast themselves. It seems Ronald Reagan wanted a lot of power, you see, so that's why they gave it to him in D.C., That's what he said. So Avita Zane was pronounced Alka Drain because it drained their generators. See, I think that's why they kept it a secret, so that when the lights all dimmed and everyone was in the dark, if they asked who was in charge, they could deny it was Reagan, huh? Which brings us to our next shocking story. It's the Weird Circle Inn, the old nurse's story, so scary!
Out of the past, phantoms of a world gone by, speak again the immortal tale, the old nurse's story.
Hear that? That tapping on the window pane? Yes, I know. Tonight it's the wind knocking the apple tree branches against the glass. But long ago, we in the big house heard that rapping. And it was not sound made by wind, nor by any mortal means. I, Hester, have been nurse for many years to this house of Ferndale. I spend my days remembering and reliving the past. I recall how Miss Maud and her sister, Miss Grace, were the prettiest young ladies in this countryside. Their father, Lord Ferndale, paid little attention to the motherless girls. So wrapped up was he in music, which was his hobby. And so, when he invited Tony Sorrento, a fine young musician, into the house as his guest, Lord Ferndale was blind to the court Mr. Tony paid to both the sisters. I remember like it was yesterday, for I was only in the next room sewing. I remember when Miss Maud turned on Miss Grace.
Look here, Grace. Someone has got to wake you up. You are acting awfully silly with Tony. You're positively moon-eyed.
Oh, am I? Anyway, I don't giggle at the least thing Tony says the way you do.
Grace.
Oh, Maud, let's not quarrel. I've wanted to tell you something for a long time, but I've been afraid you'd laugh. Promise me you won't laugh.
I couldn't laugh looking at your serious face. What is it, little sister?
I'm just terribly in love, Maudy. And Father's going to have a fit, but I can't help it. I'm just awfully in love with Tony.
Oh, Grace, this will never do. Tony... Tony's no good.
Don't say that. Don't say it. And if there's anything you know, don't tell me because it's too late.
Grace! Oh, where are you?
Please don't tell him anything, Mark, please.
Girls, where are you?
Here, Father, in the library.
I wonder you wouldn't answer before I yell my lungs out.
Maybe you two are ashamed to face me. Oh, I know what's been going on around here.
Nothing. Nothing's been going on, Tom.
We don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, don't you? Well, the whole town knows. Neither of you seem to care if our name is subject for the back fence gossips.
Get to the point, Father. What have you heard?
It's public knowledge that my guest, Tony Sorrento, has been courting both my girls, setting two sisters against each other. And you silly, stupid girls, without pride or dignity, permit this trifling nobody, this musical dandy, to make sport of you.
Don't talk that way about Tony. He hasn't been courting both of us.
I suppose, Grace, you think you're his heart's desire.
Father, don't be cruel. But, Grace, Father's right. Tony has been making love to both of us.
Don't tell me. I won't listen. I don't believe
it. You've got to believe it, you little fool. Anyway, I have sent Tony packing, bag and baggage. You'll never see him again.
You what? Where is he? Where did he go? You've got to tell me. I've got to go
Grace,
to him.
Grace, use your head.
Oh, listen to me, both of you. Tony and I were married yesterday.
Married? That cheap fortune hunter married to my daughter? I'll not have him joined to our family.
But, Father, I'm his wife and your daughter. And he is your son in spite of you.
Oh, in spite of me, indeed. Not if I renounce you as my daughter. Get out. Get out. Get out of my house. And don't ever come back.
If death had taken Miss Grace away, we in the house couldn't have mourned her more sincerely. Soon Miss Maud married, and we believed it was to get away from the gloomy place and from her father, rather than for love. Lord Fernvale's temper turned more hard and bitter after that, lashing out at nothing at all. And then, one winter evening, after Miss Grace had been gone about 6 years, I was at the big house visiting in the kitchen when my husband rushed in, telling us Miss Grace had come back and was at that moment standing at the front door. With her was a pretty little girl. We tiptoed, for we were only human, you understand. We tiptoed to the hall door to listen. But Lord Fernvale's voice would have reached us anywhere. We heard Miss Grace say,
Father, I've come back. Let's both of us forget our grievances.
You must be mistaken, young lady. I am not your father. I have one daughter living. Her name is Maud. Another daughter, Grace, died 6 years ago.
But I didn't die, Father. I am Grace. And this is Angelita, your granddaughter.
Mommy, I'm cold.
We'll be warmed up in a moment, dear.
I have no granddaughter. And only one daughter alive who married suitably and well. You've come to the wrong house, young woman.
Oh, Father, you haven't changed at all.
Mommy.
But if you don't care about me, think about Angelita, your granddaughter.
Mommy.
Look at her, Father. She looks just like you.
Cold, Mommy.
I'm not interested in the child, nor in you. You must not persist in this madness that I am your father. I tell you, my daughter Grace is dead.
All right, Father, if that's the way you want it. But don't forget, I'm your daughter. And I, too, can be hard and revengeful and mean. And I swear to you, I'll hurt you some way. Somehow. I won't rest until I make you suffer. I'll make you suffer.
You'd better hurry to the village. You may be in time to catch the late train. Good night.
We all stood like stones, so frozen we were by what we'd heard. It was a cruel night for a woman and a child to be walking to the village, for there was a bitter wind rising, and snow was beginning to fall. My husband wanted to sneak out the back way and find Miss Grace and the little one and hide them in this cottage here. But the master must have guessed our intentions, for he called us in and gave us all tasks to do, just to keep us busy and thwart our plans. When we'd finished, we thought Miss Grace and her child had surely reached the train by that time. But in the morning, as I walked across the back hillside pasture where the sheep graze, Timothy, the shepherd, called.
Hester! Hester! Come here! Quick!
What in goodness' name is it, Tim?
Here. Look. Look behind the pine tree. Against the rock.
Oh, merciful heaven. It's Miss Grace and the little one. Frozen like statues.
I heard about them coming to the big house. They must have got off the road and got lost in the blinding snow last night.
Oh, Timothy, it's awful to see them sitting there. I can just imagine how Miss Grace and the little one groped their way up the hillside and thought they'd take shelter behind the pine tree against the rock. Oh, the poor lost thing.
Mind you, Hester, how the big rock is just like a stone chair for her and the little one. Well, maybe their souls have peace and rest now.
I wonder after all that's happened and the way they died, I wonder if their souls will ever find rest. We never knew how the master felt about the tragedy, but it was plain to all he was a softer man after that. Though, whether it was the death of Grace and the child, or good news that came within the week, or both together that changed him, it's hard to say. For Maud gave the house of Fernvale an heir, the Master Robert. Lord Fernvale was fairly bursting with happiness and pride. He couldn't do enough for the boy. Lady Maud often brought Master Robert to visit at the house, and we all agreed he was an uncommonly fine, bright boy. We'd nearly forgotten the tragedies of the past, but we were soon to be reminded of them with awful clearness. When Master Robert was going on 6 years old, Lord Fernvale sent word to my cottage for me to come to the house and see him.
Hester, my daughter Maud and her son Robert are coming to stay several months this winter with me. Her husband has business in the Far East. I would like you to act as nurse to the boy.
Oh, sir, I'd be very pleased. Master Robert's such a sweet child.
Robert's the only heir to carry on our family name. I want you to take very good care of him.
Oh, indeed. I shall care for Master Robert like he was my own son.
Hester, I'm an old man. I want peace now. I want Maud to be happy here. She's never been told about the death of Grace and the child, Angelita. We Fernvales are not very forgiving. I can't say how Maud would react if she knew the circumstances under which her sister and niece died, but what's past is past, and I can't change it now, Hester. I want you to promise me you won't ever speak of Grace and of past events.
Please don't say another word, sir. You can be sure I won't speak of what's none of my business. How could I know that this would soon become very much my business, and that I would be tempted to break my solemn word to the master? Indeed, we were all so happy the first few days Lady Maud and young Robert were with us, that it hardly seemed possible our household had ever been anything but happy. And then one day, I was playing a game with Robert on the library floor, and his mother sat knitting and smiling at us, when we heard a tapping, a light tapping on the window. I doubt Robert's mother or I would have noticed the sound, but Robert dropped his toy and looked toward the window.
Mommy, I'll bet that little girl's come to play again. Oh, I can't see her very plain.
Little girl? I didn't know there were any children around here. Oh, there aren't any, ma'am. There's not even a house within 3 miles of us.
Yes, that's true.
What little girl would be walking 3 miles in the snow just to see you, Robert?
I don't know her name yet, but I've seen her most every day. She stands outside the window and knocks like that till I notice her. And then when I go out, I can't find her anywhere. There. You hear that? You just wait. In a minute you can see her. You'll see her playing.
But if she's knocking on the window, why can't we see her now?
I don't know. She comes and goes. Just like a shadow.
What does a little girl look like, Robert?
Oh, she's just a girl. She's awful cold, though. She just shivers and shivers. There. There she is. See her, Mommy? Hester, look! Look, there's a little girl right outside the window!
I don't see anyone, Robert.
Where do you see her, Robert? Where is she standing?
Right there. Right smack in front of the window. Oh, Mommy, I want to go out and bring her in so she can get warm by the fire.
All right, Robert. Bring the little girl in.
Oh, ma'am, don't let him go out there, please. Can't you see? There's no little girl outside the window.
There is, too.
Hester, I'm going to prove to Robert that the little girl he thinks he sees is imaginary. Now, run along, Robert. Put on your coat and go bring in that cold, shivering little girl.
Hear that? She wants me to hurry up. Say, Mommy, you know something? The little girl looks a little like you. Well, goodbye, Mommy. Goodbye, Hester. I'll get her.
Oh, saints preserve us, ma'am. Now I'm sure of what I'm sure of.
What are you sure of, Hester?
Oh, I can't tell you, ma'am.
That's what I thought. Hester, the people around this countryside believe there's a ghost up every chimney. I was half frightened out of my life by the ghost stories I heard when I was a child. Now, I don't want Robert to believe those old superstitions.
But how do you account for the knocking, those taps?
I can't account for them right at this moment, but if I took the trouble to investigate, I'm sure I'd find some logical, reasonable explanation.
Well, if you'll excuse me, ma'am, I want to run out and see that Robert's all right.
Wait a minute, Hester. I'll go with you. We'll all three of us look for that little girl.
Robert's mother and I got outside the house quickly, and we followed Robert's little footprints in the snow to outside the library window. His mother said,
"Well, here are just Robert's footprints. There are no others anywhere around."
That's how I thought it would be.
Calm now, Hester. Don't make a mystery out of nothing. You see, Robert's footprints lead around to the back of the house. He's probably gone to the kitchen to beg a sweet from the cook.
Yes, ma'am, I see. But I think I'll follow on around if you don't mind.
I think I do mind. I don't like the fear and hysteria in your voice. Robert will sense it, and then he really will imagine he's seeing things. Go in the house, Hester. I'll get Robert.
It seemed hours I waited in the house. I remember I went from room to room, pressing my face against each window, looking for Robert. I could hear his mother calling, first softly with confidence, then louder and louder. Finally, I knew she was frantic and afraid. I thought of Grace's last words to her father. "I won't rest till I make you suffer. I'll make you suffer." Cold fear like pincers clutched my heart as I thought of little Robert, the only heir to the family of Fernvale, and how through him terrible vengeance could be wrought. Finally, I heard the front door slam and voices in the hall. "Father! Father!"
"Hmm? What's wrong, Maud?"
"Father, I can't find Robert. I followed his footsteps to the back of the house, but then I lost them. So many people have been walking there."
"Oh, now, calm yourself, Maud. The boy can't have gone far. Where was Hester? Why wasn't she with him?"
"Oh, it was my fault. All my fault. I wouldn't let her look for him. But call everybody now. Everybody. Get everyone out to look for Robert." I got ready as fast as I could and joined in the search. And I started straight for a certain place I knew so well. For I had notions of my own about where Robert could be found. But I'd only gone a few steps when Lord Fernvale saw me and called.
Hester, where are you going?"
"To the back pasture, sir."
"Wait a minute, I'll come along. Why would Robert wander over to this rocky, lonely place?"
I don't think Robert wandered alone, sir."
What do you mean, Hester?"
"Don't ask me, sir, you'll think I'm crazy."
"Wasn't it here somewhere that Timothy found Grace and a child, Angelita?"
"Yes, it was. We've only a few steps more to the pine tree and that rock that's shaped like a chair. Oh, come on, sir."
"Hester, do you believe that curses and threats can be effective after death?"
"I don't know, sir. There's some who claim they've known of such things, but I'm sure I don't know. Around this way, sir. Around the tree."
"Yes, yes."
Oh, there he is. Oh, little Robert. Look at him. Sleeping. Sleeping on the very rock that's like a chair."
Great heavens, is he alive? Is he breathing?"
"Mommy. Mommy."
"Oh, he's alive. But so cold. So cold."
Here, wrap him in my coat."
"I brought a blanket."
"Hester! Father! Where are you?"
"Here we are, Maud. Come around the big pine tree. We found Robert."
"Oh, thank heaven. Oh,
how did he get here of all places? And what's happened to him? Oh, he's unconscious."
"Auntie Grace. Oh. Auntie Grace. Where's Angelita?"
"Aunt Grace.
My sister. Why, Robert didn't even know he had an Aunt Grace. And who's Angelita?
Pay no attention. He's a bit delirious. It's just a strange dream.
Yes. A very strange dream. Esther, run ahead and get the doctor.
For days and nights, we fought for Robert's life. In his delirium, Robert kept up a running conversation with Aunt Grace and Cousin Angelita, first with one and then the other. And Lady Maud asked me so many questions which I dared not answer, or I'd promised the master. We took turns sitting by the bed, and as I sat alone one night with Robert, I thought what a terrible power hatred is. For I had no doubt but that Robert had been led to the stone chair where the bodies of Grace and Angelita had been found, and that he had been led there through the hatred and vengeance of Grace. And then I thought, doesn't love, too, have power? Indeed, aren't we taught that love is greater than hatred? In fact, greater than all else. And then I said aloud, Grace, don't hurt Robert. He's never harmed you. Let the child go. Let go of your hatred. What's done is done. Forgiving is a happier way than hating. Listen to me, Grace. Forgiving is a happier way than hating. And true as I'm sitting here, from that night on, Robert turned for the better. In a few weeks, he was up and about, his bright little self playing again. And I was not surprised when soon after Robert's recovery, his mother came here to the cottage to see me.
Hester, I've heard rumors and whisperings at the house, and I've overheard things in the village. I know something about my sister Grace has been kept from me. I want you to tell me what it is.
I thought you'd ask me that before long, but I promised your father never to speak of it. What's past is past. Why not let it be?
Because I think I have a right to know. Strange things have happened, and I want to understand them. Now, why not ask my father to release you from the promise of keeping silent?
Will you give me your word to hold no grudges? No matter what you hear, will you promise to be forgiving?
Yes, Hester. I promise.
Then I'll go back to the big house with you and speak to your father. I'll get my coat.
Hester, do you notice there's a strange light in this room? A red glow.
Oh, ma'am. Look. Look out the window. There's fire in the big house. It's the reflection we see.
Robert. Robert's in the house.
Oh, come on, Hester. Quickly. We must save Robert. We must. We must. We ran as fast as we could across the snow-covered lawns to the big house. But by the time we got there, it was a mass of shooting fire. It seemed to me that if anyone were inside, he could never get out alive. In front of the big house, men were trying to hold someone back. It was Lord Fernvale, struggling desperately.
Let me go, you fools! Let me go, I tell you!
Hold on now, sir. It's hopeless, sir.
Let Robert... Robert's inside. I've got to go. Let me go.
Father! It's no use!
Nobody can stop me. Let go of me, you fools!
Oh, heaven help him. There he goes. That's the end of this house.
Yes, the house crumbled and fell, burning to the ground. And the head of the proud family of Fernvale died with it, for he had rushed in to save Robert and had perished there. We thought Robert had perished too, but as we stood there, fairly paralyzed with grief and shock, we heard Robert's voice. Robert!
Oh, child!
I can't believe my eyes. You're not real.
Sure I'm real. Only Angelita isn't real. She told me she isn't. She couldn't even light the fire.
What do you mean? What do you mean to light the fire?
Well, she came to the window again, and I asked her in to get warm. But the fire was out, so I tried to make a big light in the fireplace with papers and things.
Go on, child. Then what happened?
Well, Angelita said she wasn't real and she couldn't help me. So I did all by myself. But, Mommy, some way your shawl that was on the chair by the fireplace got a burn on it. Oh. And then the shawl lit up the curtain and just everything began to burn.
What did you do? How did you get out?
Oh, I wanted to stay and see it. But Angelita made me run. We got out through the French windows and ran up the hillside where Angelita's mommy lives in the snow. And Hester, Auntie Grace said I was to come back and tell you something.
Robert, your Aunt Grace doesn't live anywhere near here. Dear, you mustn't make up stories like that.
Let him tell it, ma'am. Let him tell it.
Well, Auntie Grace said she's sorry for what happened. And she says she doesn't hate anybody any longer.
What is Robert talking about, Hester?
We'll have a talk later, ma'am. I guess now this family can live in peace without fear of vengeance and old hatreds.
Oh, yes. Auntie said I must never forget some words. She said I must remember that forgiving is a happier way than hating.
Oh, Robert.
Kids, that was scary, wasn't it? You better believe it. In fact, I don't think I was the only one who was frozen with fright, huh? You know, now I think I understand why they call it the icy hand of death. Let me tell you. You know, it's interesting how hatred can go in cycles, or rather sickles, icicles, huh? Yes, I think there's hair in the background. And to think it was all started because that one daughter, how should you say, fell from grace, huh? Oh, really? Now, all the while, Maud never knew. Now, if she were me, I would have given the father the first degree for murder in the second degree of grace in 0 degree. But she didn't. And whenever she asked, Dad gave instructions to give her the cold shoulder, huh? I guess you could say he specialized in snow jobs, huh? But at least the ending was heartwarming. Unless you were the dad, then it was heartburn, huh? And speaking of hats, it's time now for the man who knows what evil lurks there. It's the Shadow in Ghost Building So Scary!
Thrilling adventures of the Shadow are on the air, brought to you each week by the Blue Coal Dealers of America. These dramatizations are designed to demonstrate forcibly to old and young alike that crime does not pay. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gene Paul King, pinch hitting for his sick pal, Ken Roberts, and telling you that the Shadow starts his adventure in just a moment. But first, are you starting off the right way these cold winter mornings? Does your furnace send up quick heat the moment you open the drafts? It will if you burn Blue Coal. What's more, with Blue Coal, you'll have a truly comfortable, well-heated home all day long. So next time you order fuel, be sure to ask for Blue Coal. You can get Blue Coal and free information on low-cost home heating from your neighborhood Blue Coal dealer. Give him a call first thing in the morning. The Shadow, mysterious character who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. As the Shadow, Cranston is gifted with hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so that they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs. Today's story, The Ghost Building.
Jerome Need speaking. Yes? Yes, we just completed purchase of the ground this morning. That's right. And in your story, you can say that the building we intend to erect will be the largest and finest in the world. We're calling it the Coast Building. That's right. Not at all. Goodbye. Oh, Miss Carlson, I...
Wait, who are you? What are you doing in here?
Now, Mr. Need, don't get excited.
Who are you?
You're the head of the construction company of this proposed new Coast Building, are you not?
That's right. Now, look, if you're a reporter, I've already given the story...
I'm not a reporter. I've come here to warn you not to erect that building.
Now, listen, if this is a prank, it's in pretty poor taste.
This is not a prank. It is simply a forecast of death and torture if the present plans go through.
I don't know who you are, nor do I take any stock in your forecast.
I'm sorry, but you're wrong on both counts. My forecast must come true. And you do know me.
Oh. From where?
From the past. It's slight wonder that you don't recognize me after all this time. But one day, Jerome Need, you will remember me all too well. You'll pay me back in full all that you owe me.
Hey, watch yourself. You almost missed that rivet.
I was just thinking.
You ain't supposed to think. You're supposed to catch rivets.
Oh, that's what I was thinking. Years from now, when my kid says to me, Pop, what did you have to do with putting up that largest building in the world?
And you'll say what?
I'll say, a guy threw a rivet, and I caught the rivet. Then a guy threw a rivet, and I caught the rivet. Then a guy threw a rivet.
Catch that when it's coming now.
Oh, I didn't see.
Hey, look out. Don't lean over like that. Mike, look out.
Watch out above, we're swinging the girder in.
Hey, boss, look at that lad up there. His back is turned. You don't see the girder.
Stop that frame, quick!
Look out up there!
Watch it, boss! Look out!
It hit him! It hit him, boss! He's falling!
Too many die in that squat. Too many die on this job.
Hey, you got to take chances in this business,
Joe. Not me, I don't. Too many dead men in the foundation of this building now. I got Anna and the kids to think about.
Nah, you're talking screwy. We're safer up here than them guys down on the street. Besides, Anna and them kids got to eat, don't they?
Sure, don't worry. I feed them, but not from this job. I'm going below and quit now. This Coast Building is jinxed.
Okay. Good luck, Joe.
Yeah, so long, kids.
So long, Joe. Hey, watch your step. Joe, hold on!
Lamont, I thought you weren't coming.
I'm sorry I'm late, Margot.
You know, there's nothing duller than a dedication ceremony. I was beginning to think I'd have to sit through it all alone.
Why, that's a fine thing to say, Margot. But I'm about to introduce you to Robert Lewis, the architect who designed this Coast Building.
Oh, dear.
Well, do you think you'd like to meet Miss Lane after that remark, Bob?
Oh, of course I would. I even agree with his statement. How do you do, Miss Lane?
Hello, Mr. Lewis.
Say, this is a distinguished gathering. Look who's among those present. Our good police commissioner. Hello there, Weston.
Hello, Lamont.
Well.
Hello, Commissioner.
Do you know Bob Lewis?
Yes, glad to see you, Mr. Lewis.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Oh, what brings you here, Commissioner?
Duty. Just duty. These things bore me stiff. You waste half a day listening to an old stuffed shirt like Jerome Need, take a lot of bows, and watch him lay a cornerstone.
Why, Commissioner, is that a nice way to talk about one of our leading citizens?
Leading citizen, my eye. Need is as crooked as a corkscrew. If he didn't hold a high political office, the judge would have thrown the book at him years ago. Furthermore,
ladies,
if we can...
Ladies and gentlemen...
Here's your friend, Mr. Need, now.
Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to dedicate this glorious edifice. Although there were several unavoidable delays in the building's construction, we have still finished on schedule. And today I am justly proud to present to our fair city the world's largest and most modern structure. I would like at this time
to... Enough of your lies, Mr. Need.
What was that? What
Someone's cut in on the public address system.
But there's no one standing beside him.
For you, Mr. Need.
I shall continue your speech for you and tell the truth about this great building of yours.
Where is that voice coming from?
It is useless to attempt to find me, so you just have to listen.
Let's hear what he has to say, Margot.
That's better. Many months ago, I warned Jerome Meade not to try to erect a coast building. These warnings were not heeded. In reciting the glories of this building, Mr. Meade did not mention one very important thing that went into its construction. Human life. Yes, human life. The foundation of this building is not all steel, brick, and concrete. There is also blood. Blood of the men who died during its construction.
That's a lie. That's a lie.
Be quiet. I have another warning for you, Jerome Meade. And all of you listening shall be my witnesses. The ghosts of those men who died will return to haunt the coast building. In fact, before too long, the coast building will be known as the Ghost Building.
Oh, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Mr. Cranston. Is Mr. Lewis in, please?
Oh, yes. Come right in. He's expecting you.
Thank you.
Oh, Bob, Mr. Cranston is here.
Righto.
I'm Bob's uncle, John.
Oh, how do you do, sir? This is Miss Lane.
How do you do, Miss Lane?
Well, Bob. Miss Lane.
Hello.
Won't you come on into the study?
Yes, thank you.
I'll have some tea prepared, Bob.
Thank you, Uncle John. Right in here, Lamont, Miss Lane.
Thanks. Has anyone learned how that voice cut in on Mr. Need's speech yesterday, Bob?
Yes. Whoever it was hooked up another mic on the line inside the building.
Oh, I see. But you haven't learned his identity.
No. Won't you sit down, please?
Yes, thanks.
Frankly, I'm worried, Lamont. I'm worried because the coast building has meant everything to me. I don't know if I've ever told you of my earlier life, Lamont.
No, you haven't, Bob.
Well, I was brought up in an orphanage.
Yes.
Now, the only reason I tell you this is so that you might understand how important this job has been to me. You see, ever since I left the home, my one ambition was to find success as an architect.
Which you certainly have.
Well, I thought so until yesterday, but now I'm not so sure.
What do you mean, Bob?
Well, if the coast building turns out as that voice predicted, if it is jinxed, then all my hopes are ruined.
But surely you're not going to let an idle threat spoil this great triumph.
I don't think it was an idle threat.
Well, why do you say that?
Well, let me show you this personal message that I discovered in this afternoon's paper. I chanced on it in the classified section. Here you are, Lamont. Read this.
Where is it?
Right there, right at the bottom of the page.
Oh, yes, yes. To Henry Johnson, president of H.P. Johnson Corporation. This is not a warning. It is a forecast. The first of many to come. The ghosts of those who died that the coast building might be erected will return today to claim their own.
Johnson has a suite of offices in that building.
But surely a threat as public as that couldn't be carried out.
Has anyone notified Johnson?
I tried to reach him on the phone, but he was busy, so I left word for him to call me back.
Well, perhaps we should go over there and...
Oh, this may be he know. Hello? Oh, yes, Mr. Need. What? When? I see. I'll be right over.
What's the trouble, Bob?
Henry Johnson has just been found in his private office in the Coast Building, stabbed to death.
Gone down, 70th floor.
Well, if I can crowd in here.
Step in, sir. Move the rear of the car, please.
We'll make room for you, Bill.
Oh, look, Fred.
Aren't you going home a little early?
Well, to tell you the truth, Fred, I read that personal in the paper today, the one that forecast death to everyone using the express elevator at exactly 5 o'clock, so I figured I'd beat the rush.
Superstitious?
No, just careful.
Well, it's a good thing that you're not superstitious, because your watch is wrong. It's exactly 5 o'clock now.
5 o'clock. Listen, everybody. This car's out of control.
Hold, hold. Hold.
This is the last window I'm going to wash, see? 55 stories is too high up.
Stop grumbling, will you?
Listen, did you see the paper this morning? There was an ad in it, see? And that ad says a window cleaner's going to do a Brody sometime today, and, brother, I just ain't going to be that guy. No, sir, I...
Hey, my safety belt's busted.
Here, give me a hand. Come in.
I can't reach a car!
Now, look, Mr. Need. I didn't ask you down to headquarters to get your opinion on what's legal and what isn't legal. That goes for you, too, Mr. Lewis.
Commissioner, I'm not arguing with you at all.
What?
As both Miss Lane and Mr. Cranston here know, I'm just as anxious to solve this mystery as you are.
That's true, Commissioner.
All right, Cranston, just let me handle this.
Well, I can't say that I think much of your handling so far, Weston.
Oh, no, Mr. Need. Well, suppose you toy with this little statement for a few minutes. I'm arresting you on suspicion of murder.
What? Why, of all that...
What do you base this on, Commissioner?
Have you got any
proof? Now, wait a minute, all of you. I've got a story to tell. It won't take long, but it definitely links you, Mr. Need, with these mysterious deaths.
Oh, this is ridiculous. But go ahead. Let's hear your accusation.
I've been checking the newspapers to learn who was sending in those fatal ads in the personal column. And I learned that they'd been sent from various substations and paid for by postal money orders signed by different aliases.
Why does that cast suspicion on me?
Well, in the first place, Need, I've known you as a crook for many years.
Why, you...
But your fatal mistake was brought about by overconfidence. You see, the newspapers, on orders from me, did not publish the last warning they received. They turned it over to me.
What are you driving at, Weston?
This particular warning was addressed to Jules Seaborn, president of Seaborn and Eddy, one of the few remaining tenants in the building. It said that he'd be killed this afternoon.
Have you warned Mr. Seaborn?
Not personally. I left word for him to contact me. However, the warning wasn't necessary, because I have the would-be murderer here in my office.
Weston, I demand to know why you say that.
Because, as I said before, overconfidence led to your fatal mistake. This last message to the papers was paid for by a money order signed by a person named Dean. D-E-E-N.
Dean?
Now do you understand? Obviously, Dean is Need, spelled backwards.
Dean, eh? I'm beginning to understand.
Ah.
Tell me, Weston, was there any first initial accompanying the name of Dean?
As if you didn't know. Yes, my friend, the first initial was J. J for Jerome.
I thought so. John Dean.
What?
He was the one who warned me not to put up the Coast Building. He said you'll pay me back for what you owe me.
Who are you talking about, Meade?
I can't say just yet.
Can't say? You're under arrest for murder and you can't say? Hello, Commissioner Weston speaking.
Hello, Commissioner. This is Jules Seaborn. You called me?
Yes, Seaborn, I did. I thought you ought to know that I intercepted a newspaper ad today that forecast your being the next victim in the Coast Building.
Oh, I see. Well, I wouldn't worry about that if I were you. No one is going to kill me in the middle of the afternoon in the world's largest office building. Besides, my secretary is right outside the door, and she... Who's that? What do you want here?
Seaborn, what in blazes is that?
Put down that gun. I said put down it.
Seaborn! Seaborn! I told you I was innocent, Commissioner.
Well, Commissioner, who's your murderer now?
More from the Ghost Building in just a moment. But first, are you looking for a home heating plan that will really give you your money's worth? Of course you are. And that's why I recommend Blue Coal. For Blue Coal is America's finest hard coal. And no doubt about it. You see, Blue Coal comes from the very heart of Pennsylvania's richest anthracite region, mined deep down in the earth, where only the best hard coal is found. Consequently, Blue Coal distributes a steady flow of even-burning, long-lasting, healthful heat from cellar to attic. Yes, a Blue Coal fire will keep you warm and comfortable and help safeguard your family against colds caused by chilly or underheated rooms. So fill your bin with Blue Coal. And when ordering, ask your dealer about the Blue Coal Automatic Heat Regulator. It controls the heat in your home by automatically opening and closing furnace dampers. Yes, Blue Coal and a Blue Coal Heat Regulator working together make the modern combination for real comfort and real economy. This is part of the Blue Coal plan for better heat at less cost. Give your neighborhood dealer a call tomorrow. His name is listed in the Where to Buy It section of your classified telephone directory under the words Blue Coal. And now, we return to the Ghost Building.
I realize that there's a slight penalty for illegal entry, Margot, but it must be done.
Well, I'd like to know how you came by that bunch of skeleton keys, Lamont.
Why, in my spare time, I whittle them.
In your spare time, you whittle
them? That's right, I whittle. There we are. May I have that flashlight, please?
Yes, here you are.
Thank you. You better stay close to me, Margot. With all these murders that have occurred here in the Ghost Building, it's just possible that what I seek in Mr. Lewis's office may be pretty well guarded.
I won't stray, don't worry.
Well, let's have a look in this desk.
May I hold the flashlight for you?
Yes, please.
Lamont, what if a watchman or someone should see this light?
They only check this floor once an hour. I made sure of that. Well, no luck so far.
What are you looking for?
A very important bit of evidence that I hope to find here, but it doesn't seem to... Hello? What's this?
Is that it? Is that what you were after, this letter?
No, it isn't what I came after, but nonetheless, it just about cinches the case.
Why? What's in it?
I haven't even looked at its contents. The address and the envelope is all that I need. I'll show you what...
What are you doing here?
Steady, Margo.
Answer me, why are you here?
If you take that mask off your face, I might answer you.
You'll answer me now or I'll shoot.
Now, look, we haven't any... Put out that flashlight, Margo. Duck!
Why, you...
It's no use, Margot. He's gotten away, and we can't break through this panel.
Lamont, where could he have gone?
He's somewhere behind this wall. Did you see that trail of blood leading across the floor? I must have wounded him.
Lamont, what can we do?
I know what you can do, Margot.
What?
Contact Commissioner Weston at once. Tell him to send a squad of men to the Ghost Building because I'm certain that another murder will soon occur.
Well, where are you going?
I'm going to pay a call on Robert Lewis's home as the Shadow.
Uncle John. Uncle John, is that you? Thought he came in. Now, let me see. There's windows on the ground floor. Space for a store. What was that?
Sorry to interrupt your work, Mr. Lewis.
Who is it? Who's speaking to me?
I am known as the Shadow.
Where are you? I don't see anyone.
I'm standing right beside you, Mr. Lewis. But you needn't bother to look for me. By my hypnotic power, I've made myself quite invisible to your eyes.
Why are you here? What do you want of me?
I would like to know where your uncle is.
Why, he's out.
Then perhaps you can tell me what I wish to know about him.
What is it?
Is he really your uncle, Mr. Lewis?
Of course. Of course he is.
You're lying.
Now, see here, I don't...
The man that you call your uncle is in reality your father. Isn't this true?
No. No.
And you are not Robert Lewis. You are Robert Dean, the son of John Dean, the man you call your uncle.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Then perhaps if I remind you of a letter, it will help. A letter addressed to you at the orphanage, postmarked 1908. I found it in your office.
How dare you rifle my office?
I checked with the orphanage and found that a Robert Dean had been left there in 1908 at the age of 3, after his mother had died, and his father had been sent to prison to serve a 40-year term. He was sentenced for attempted murder on the person of Jerome Need, his business associate.
You learned all this?
Your father was released in October of 1940 for good behavior. And he has since made good his revenge on Jerome Need.
You can't prove that.
Oh, but I can. By the money order that he signed with the name J. Dean, Jerome Need could identify him, too.
Why do you do this to me?
Because you share your father's guilt. Your complicity helped him perform the murder.
No, no!
You built those secret passageways in the building. And I have an idea that you even have blueprints. Secret blueprints of your work. Now, Where are they?
You'll never get those.
So you have them, then. In that drawer that you involuntarily reached
Keep
for.
Away from me. You shall never get those
prints. Oh, yes, I will. Don't put out that
You're
light.
Too late, Mr. Shadow.
Not too late to see those prints and take
Give
them.
Give them to me. Give them back to me.
You'll never get them now.
No. Then you won't get me.
Lewis! Lewis!
I hated letting Lewis get away, but at least I have the blueprints, Margot. Here. Take a look at them.
What are those circled numbers, Lamont?
Well, number one was Johnson's office. Number two, the elevator shaft. Number three, the window ledge from which the cleaner fell. Number four, Seaborn's office.
But what is number five? That's circle two.
Wait. I'll look below. Wait, that's the conference room of the Board of Trustees. That must be the planned scene of the next murder.
Oh, Lamont, you really think so?
Of course, Margot. If another vicious killing is to be averted, we must get to the ghost building at once. Come along, Margot. Weston's right down here.
All right. Lamont, I wonder why the commissioner has stationed so many police on this conference room floor. Do you suppose something's happened?
I don't know. I hope we're not too late. Oh, there's Weston. Commissioner!
Wait a minute. Not so loud, Cranston. There's a meeting going on in there.
I know. That's why I'm here. You've got to stop that meeting at once.
Oh, is that so?
Now, look, Weston. I happen to know that the next murder or murders in this building will take place in that room.
Oh, you mean that 10 board members all together, somebody's going to sneak in there and stab the boss.
I'm telling you the truth, Commissioner.
And I'm telling you the truth. Meade and his directors are holding a meeting in there. And at their request, they're not going to be disturbed. Now, that's my orders.
And, Commissioner, you know how I love to break your orders.
Hey, get away from that door. Oh, no! Cranston, I'm running this show.
Weston, put a handkerchief to your face at once.
This room is full of a poisonous gas.
Holy Moses!
We must open the windows quickly.
Are those men, are they alive?
There's a chance that they might be.
How was it done? I was at the door.
Don't talk, you fool.
What?
There we are. We've taken as much of this as we can stand. Come on.
Yeah, I'm going to... I was right there.
You all right, Weston?
Yes, I'll...
Get some men in there. Bring those directors out.
Yeah, well, Senator Hill. Come on, you boys.
Lamont, what happened?
Our room is full of a poisonous gas. It must have been released through the ventilating system.
Are they dead?
I don't know. I hope not. I haven't time to wait to find out.
Well, where are you going?
The Shadow is going to follow the secret passageway in the blueprint that will lead him to the murderers.
Dad, won't you let me get you to a doctor?
No. No, son. Wouldn't be safe for you. Besides, I'm afraid it's too late. This wound is bleeding so much.
Dad, isn't there anything I can do?
Yes. Yes, Robert, there is.
What is it?
My plan. My plan of vengeance. You must carry it through. Knowing that, I can die happy.
What was that? The Shadow.
I see you remember me, Mr. Lewis.
How did you get here?
Your blueprints were a great help. And now that I am here, your plan of killing is at an end.
Who is this man? I cannot see him.
I am invisible to your eyes, Mr. John Dean. But I'm familiar with all you've done. The victims you've claimed in this building.
He knows everything?
Yes, Dad, everything.
Then he must know why I killed. Need sent me to prison. I was an innocent man. An innocent man. My wife died of a broken heart when they took me away. That is why I swore vengeance against Mr. Need. I've ruined him by destroying his greatest dream.
Nonetheless, you and your son must both pay for your crime.
No. No, not Robert. He mustn't suffer, too.
He was your accomplice. Your willing accomplice.
I see. Then you forced me to change my plan. Yes.
What do you mean?
I have a charge of dynamite planted down here for just such an emergency as this. I'm about to die anyway, and if my son is to face the electric chair, I'd rather he went out with me, taking all others with us.
I wouldn't advise your doing that, Mr. Dean.
You're too late, Mr. Shadow. My son has slipped over to the plunger that will set off the charge. See? Even now, he awaits my words.
Yes, how do you like that, Mr. Shadow?
Don't touch that dynamite, Lewis.
Go on, son. Now. The plunge of now.
Yes.
Nothing happened.
No. I should have told you that I discovered your dynamite and took the precaution of cutting the wires. I guess there's nothing left to do now, gentlemen, except to wait for the arrival of the police.
before pronouncing sentence on you, John Dean and your son Robert Dean, I would like to point out to you and to all other members of society that no matter how great a grievance you have against an individual or individuals, you have neither a legal nor a moral right to seek a personal vengeance to atone that grievance. Your case is an object lesson of a familiar phrase that cannot be repeated too often. Crime does not pay.
And now, before we hear from the Shadow again, a brief word from John Barclay, America's home heating expert. Mr. Barclay.
Thank you, Gene Paul King, and good evening, friends. You know, of all the letters I've received recently, one from a man upstate interested me particularly. He wanted to know why his furnace fire kept dying out. Well, in the first place, a well-kept fire doesn't die out unless something's wrong with the draft. And a poor draft may be due to any number of causes, such as loose bricks in the chimney or blocked flue passages. So I advised him to get in touch with his neighborhood blue coal dealer immediately. Since then, he writes me that a John Barclay trained serviceman discovered the trouble was a leaking connection around the smoke pipe where it entered the chimney. Naturally, this caused him a great deal of unnecessary inconvenience until it was fixed. Well, I just thought I'd mention this as an example of a common complaint. And in case you're not entirely satisfied with the results your furnace is giving you, let a John Barclay trained serviceman give it the once-over. He can probably help you, too. For this extra customer service, just phone your neighborhood blue coal dealer tomorrow morning. Thank you.
Today's program is based on a story copyrighted by The Shadow Magazine. The characters, names, places, and plot are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Same station, the Blue Coal Dealers of America bring you an adventure of the Shadow that will send thrills racing up and down your spine. So be sure to listen, and be sure to phone your friendly Blue Coal Dealer for greater heating comfort at less cost. This is Gene Paul King saying, keep the home fires burning with Blue Coal.
Kids, was that a scary story or what? Actually, I guess it was a scary story. There were 55 of them, you know. Really? Wow. Like I've heard of building horror, but that was too much, huh? Wow. Boy, and what about that architect? He sure had evil designs, huh? Yes, in fact, I think all his blueprints left blood prints, huh? Like, I know Inspector, but I'm willing to bet the only codes that building met was Code Blue, huh? Like those poor folks in the elevators, the ones you might say got the shaft, huh? I bet when they learned what had happened, they were all pretty floored, huh? And Joe, the construction worker that tried to retire, the only pension he got was suspension. That is, until he hit the pavement, huh? But I got to hand it to him, though. When he said he was going to hit the road, he meant it, huh? I think I hear him now, huh? How about you? But I guess that's why they call them skyscrapers. You have to scrape up whoever falls from the sky, huh? Well, that reminds me, kids, I've got to fly. So until next week, same bat time, same bat station. This is the Count reminding you, whenever someone offers you constructive advice, take it, huh?
Device to you until next week.
No.